You're listening to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the people at the United Astrology Conference. My name is Eric Francis, your host. So far in this four-day internet radio marathon, welcome back. The guest I'm sitting with right now is a gentleman named Dale. He is a Canadian guy who wound up living among the Mayans. And he's going to tell some of his stories about that and give us some information about the transit of Venus and some things he's learned from the Mayans. Now, I thought, Dale, the Mayans all disappeared.
Well, they disappeared from the temple civilizations, and a lot of them disappeared from the colonialization that came with Cortez in 1519. They left the lowland jungles and moved into the mountainous regions of what is now known as Guatemala, and also southern Mexico in the Chiapas region.
So they went for the hills, basically.
They went for the hills, but they maintained the most valuable sources of their great ancestry.
Right.
And that great ancestry is linked very closely to Quetzalcoatl, who is the Lord of the Dawn, and as we know in modern terms, as the planet Venus. What's really significant and very significant for us today in our meeting here are a number of things. One of them is that the great kings, the great Mayan kings, who ruled through various periods in the high point of the temple civilizations, all claimed to be direct descendants of Quetzalcoatl or Kukulkan, which is another name for the same god.
So they think that their great-great-great-granddaddy is this big kind of phoenix dragon who appears every morning and brings the sun.
Yes, that's right.
Basically.
Yeah, the rising star. This is important because, again, what's not really well understood, and perhaps we'll have more dialogue around this today.
The sun is a rising star. They look at the sun as a rising star?
No, Venus as the dawn star.
Yes, yes.
Particularly when it's removed from the sun, because Venus's strength comes from the largeness of its brightness and the time that it's in the sky before the sun arrives.
When it's the morning star, which it is after the heliacal rise, which comes after the transit of Venus, by about 8 days, I think. Is that right?
Yes. In this case, it's just a very short time. And when it's in the evening sky, it takes quite a bit longer, 60 days.
Ah.
However, there are certain aspects of this that are very important for us simply because it's tied in with a much greater influence that comes from the pole star, from the galactic center. And this is how it...
But the pole star is not near the galactic center, right? So you're talking about the GC, though, not the pole star.
Well, again, you see, through various periods of time, you have different stars that were considered to be the pole star. The Egyptians were focused through a different one because the gravitational field of the Earth shifts. Mm-hmm. The one that we're currently recognizing is around 27.5 degrees of Sagittarius. And so it's very close to the winter solstice point.
Elevated up higher? I mean, the GC is close to the ecliptic, isn't it?
Okay. But you see, a lot of this depends, and this brings up another part of the conversation, what is on the midheaven? In Central America, what is on the midheaven, and this is also what makes the story very interesting, is the constellation of Orion. And that's where the present Venus eclipse is taking place, in the sign of Gemini, which is the constellation of Orion and Orion's belt.
Right.
If where I'm from in northern Canada, the Big Dipper is right overhead. And so the pole star is very prominent because it's in the northern hemisphere. So this is where we have different sky images.
Perspectives based on where we grew up and where our cosmology grew up.
Exactly. And
right.
that's very important because, for instance, where I live in Central America, and the designs of my house temples all set similar to the sky perspectives that the Mayans had. Recently, though, I was up in the Great Center, which was the largest city in the world at its time, Tikal, larger than the city of Rome, for instance. And the sky there is different than where I live in the mountains southwest of that area, about 500 miles. So it was very important, and also the fact was that the Mayans built their temples for the strict observation of the planet Venus, and this is what allowed them, and this is also why it's so exciting for us, too, to have the renewal of understanding of the fact that they were great archaeoastronomers. They were truly the first and perhaps the only civilization to really be able to track through hundreds of years exact precise cycles of time. No other civilization. Now, the Egyptians had some patterns that were close to that, but nothing can compare to the information and the fact that the Mayans planned all of their ceremonies very elaborately according to planetary movements.
Yes. And so. Venus was one of their very favorites. And I've been describing the transit of Venus as the most 2012 thing about 2012, if we think of 2012 as having any connection to the Mayans, because the Mayans were so completely infatuated with Venus. They just love this planet.
Correct.
And the cycle. Yes. So if we want anything distinctly 2012 that the Mayans would recognize for sure, that's, I think, the best of them. What's the truth of the calendar? I mean, is the 13th Bogdan ending on 12-21-12? Is 12-22-12
yes.
really day 13.0.0.0.0?
Yes, this is a very important part of the whole quote-unquote prophetic nature of this, even though it's very basic. But it is very important for us to understand this because the long count of 5,125 years does end on the 21st of December, 2012.
What do you call that 5,125? Is that a picton?
The long count is the series of 52 years repeated until you have 394 years. And then you have 13
cycles. That's a Bogdan. 394
yeah,
is a Bogdan.
Exactly. And then you have 13 cycles of heaven and 9 cycles of hell. So this long cycle began very precisely on August 13th of 3113
BC. Yeah.
Yes.
Where there were no Mayans back then. They just back counted.
Well, but in terms of temple civilization, no. But in terms of people living in those areas, yes. But when we're talking about temple civilizations, that's where we begin to get these incredibly precise calculations that developed through generation after generation until it was perfected
right.
to within 6 seconds of our most precise astronomical instruments. So we know that they really followed these cycles astutely until the rhythm was very precise.
Right. And it's pretty interesting to have that Venus transit in the year that the Bogdan ends.
Well, I think it somehow it's all from a Mayan perspective, it's just simply
this is it.
This is the moment. And what the overwhelming feeling in the Mayan, the original daykeeper Mayan communities in Central America is one of great joy. And the reason for that is that when you live totally in relation, because Venus is the measure, the other important thing here is that Venus is the measure of everything that exists on Earth, that grows on Earth, that prospers, that survives on Earth. And so it's also the conduit for everything that lives inside of our own human bodies.
How is that so?
Well, let's take, for example, I'm living in my own temples on Lake Atitlan, which is an incredible vortex of power. It's 1,200 feet deep. And
1,200 foot deep lake?
Yeah.
That's a pretty deep lake. He's reaching for a picture of it.
So here's an image of me in front of the lake, in front of my temples. And there are two volcanoes, the San Pedro volcanoes on the right side, mm-hmm. and three on the left side. Now, in its own essence, this is a grand vortex of power. The lake is very, very unique. It was considered to be the breathing point, the naval point between South and Central America.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1,200 feet deep, and Jacques Cousteau could never actually find the real bottom. He went down there and came to the bottom, but it was planed out. But then there was this other hole, and he couldn't go into it, which is somehow it's...
We need James Cameron to go down in his little machine to go down there. Maybe he'll
find
keep
it.
Going through and come out and...
Very cold down there.
Before he'll find the what's that thing called? The...
Oh, yes.
Zibalba. He'll find the little portal to Zibalba in there. So now, are we going into 8 cycles of hell? I mean, are you suggesting that the 13 cycles of heaven are over and...
The 9 cycles of hell are also over, too. This... To really integrate it into the modern world, in some ways, is very simple. Think of it in this way. This last winter, because we're meeting at a conference in which we're discussing Venus on the rise, but the actual fact is on the 30th, in a couple days, Venus disappears.
Yes, I noticed that it's actually declining. Yeah.
She's declining.
Waning.
Yeah. Exactly.
In relation to the sun.
As astrologers, we know that when you come to the new moon, you stop everything in order to breathe, to let go. Part of my whole shamanic process is called return to zero. And that's like what is essential in a lunar society. The new moon is the bleeding time. It's the releasing time. It's the letting go time. And the Mayans perfected zero, and they had a relationship with zero that is pure Zen. That zero is nothingness. And what is nothingness? It's the point where the breath stops and where it begins again. So it's this point of emptiness, shunyatya. So we're at that point also globally in this culture where all the ancient cultures are being washed down into the so-called modern society. And through that, we're able to use the lens of these ancient cultures if we let go of our dominance and say, well, what do they really have to teach us? And what's most important for 2012 and for the time between the Venus eclipse and the 21st of December is that this is the shifting point between the last 5,000 years and the galactic beam of energy that supported human life from the power vortex. In other words, the galactic center is the sun that our solar system rotates around. Mm-hmm. So it's like the Grand Chief out there, and he's saying, okay, we're going to change frequencies at this point. This is why we have said, okay, it's the end of the world, what do we do now? No, it's not the end of the world. It's the end of a frequency that has led to the climatic, results of Western civilization, and now we're shifting into a new frequency. Jose Arguez, when I first read his stuff, I didn't understand it at all, but now in 2012, it becomes really clear that the old frequency is ending, and with it, time, money, because it's current, and a new frequency is beginning. And so what we have then is similar to the moment we're in right now, where you have a final descent of Venus getting ready for a rebirth. So you have both. You have the ending and you have the beginning.
Right. And there's a transitional phase, a series of transitional phases that we then enter.
Yes, and we're well...
And a big one between June and December, basically once two seasons.
The aperture. The opening.
Right.
Because we know that during eclipses there's a suspension process. That means that there's a shadow that comes in, and it's similar to doing shamanic ritual. Yep. You want to stop everything. Returning to zero is neutralizing everything to allow a channel or vortex of energy to come through.
Right.
So in a grand style, this is the moment from the eclipse that we're entering right now through to the 21st in this year, in which we're in a suspension between the final denouement of the old 5,000-year cycle and the full release of the new cycle.
Right.
So it makes for a grand visionary moment, which all of us astrologers love, even though the complexity of it is a little hard to grasp.
Well, our last guest was talking about the significance of having a vision as these things happen and letting the incoming energies animate your vision, give life to your vision. So that's what he was proposing.
Okay, and then if we add other Aboriginal cultures into this, because I've traveled and was actually gifted with my name when I was with the Hopi Indians for a spring equinox ceremony. And crying for a vision is exactly what we need right now. Because instead of, when you come to the end of a cycle, it's like the end of life. You're in a very final contraction, and the body shrivels, it dries up, it dies. However, at that point, the spirit, if we think of it in terms of, say, the Dalai Lama and pure lineages, you have a vision of your next lifetime, and you pass that on to your guides beside you, and then a few years later, they go and they find a new child. Mm-hmm. This is commonly accepted in the Tibetan tradition mm-hmm. for the new incarnation that's coming in. Mm-hmm. In a similar way, we're in that situation right now. The vision will come through this eclipse and release itself in its fullest extent on the solstice of 2012. During that time, we're in this struggle between what we have to let go of. So it's only natural that the time-money frequencies at this point will become more and more destabilized mm-hmm. because they're tied in together. And also, realistically, you cannot have power, money power, accumulated at the top. And if there's not enough circulation at the bottom, think of the potlatch or the giveaway ceremony mm-hmm. when your tribal elders or leaders had too much wealth, they gave it away. Because they knew it was going to keep coming back to them, and you have to keep giving it away.
Right.
So,
well, that's an economy. I mean, that's...
This is economy, but think of it as currency. Mm-hmm. Because this is the other side of it. Frequency. What is frequency? The electromagnetic grid of the Earth, if it shifts at this point, our electromagnetic grid would have to shift with it as well, because it's all based on the frequencies of the Earth. Mm-hmm. Time and money, if time and money dissolves at this point, we enter a new frequency, well, our time-money systems have to be completely shifted as well.
Right.
You know, your computer crashes, you have to reboot. Your economic system crashes, you have to reboot. Whatever you're holding on to at that point returns to zero. Okay, and if you're holding on to it and it dissolves, well, you have nothing left. Versus if you know how to transmute the energy, then you rise with it in its new form. This is what Venus is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, one other very important thing here that comes from the Mayans is that their perception of Venus as the dawn star was very radically different than Venus as the
night star.
Night star.
It was the war symbol as the night star, wasn't it? Was it a...
Not quite.
Okay.
But that's an important part of it.
Was it more of the nature of Mars, or is that the morning star? Well, I'll let you tell it. Because
I know, but this question comes back and forth between us, because the dawn star was all about springtime. He was also the god of the wind.
A different god. Thought it was even Western astronomers thought it was a different planet for a while, right? And then the
ancients in Western culture thought it was two planets.
Yes.
The Mayans got this really clear.
They figured it out that it was one planet.
But Venus is an incredible marvel because no other planet does that, where it disappears and comes up in the other sky, you know. Venus, and, you know, it does parallel the descent of Inanna, but not quite. Because the descent of Inanna is similar to Venus going into Scorpio. It's a much more elaborate energy than we can often compromise. The best way to understand it is that when we see Venus as we have, and also one of the most important things in the cycle that's completing right now is the fact that Venus and Jupiter were so beautiful this last winter, and they were in Venus's home sign of Taurus.
Yes.
And what they did was they ignited the fact that the Mayans are the bringers of harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? However, your question about war is really important because... At a certain point, they shifted and were focused too much on the shadow side of Venus, the dark side, and they got swallowed by war. And
they split up by war, yep.
Okay. However, there was an exact conjunction on August the 6th, and it was an eclipse on 794 A.D., and they were very aware of this, and the temple civilizations dissolved in the next 100 years. That conjunction was of Mars and Saturn, exactly in the same degrees as the Venus eclipse. So their alignments through...
It was a Mars-Saturn conjunction in the exact degree of the eclipse in 794 A.D.
I have the chart with me here.
So that's during the classical Mayan era.
Exactly, and at the high point.
So then what happens?
Well, this is where Linda Schell's work, because I brought a couple books with me, and her book, The Forest of Kings, even though she's a researcher and was able to help through a period of it, the Mayan code was only clarified in the last 25 years.
Yes.
Only in the late
80s. Yes.
And it was because they were using sounds in such a way that could be interwoven. So, when you combined it with R, ur, and then urn as an example, the three symbols could be used in such a way so that you had many different interpretations of this. And that's why in the linear approach of Western civilization, we couldn't tap into the fact that the Mayans were using other forms of intelligence. What we do know, for instance, is that the whole Mayan calendar was set to start when the Pleiades reemerged every 52 years at dawn. And that's how they started the calendar.
Which calendar? The long count or the...
The 52-year count.
Okay.
Okay, every 52 years, the Pleiades reemerge in the same place in the sky. What this tells us, then, is that the Mayans were in touch with the light intelligence coming through from the Pleiades.
How does that happen? I mean, they're fixed stars, so their longitude doesn't change. What's the moving thing?
Well, the whole moving thing is our solar system in relation to the fact, yes, okay, all the planets are moving and the sun is moving and so on. The fixed stars, because they're so much farther out, do not appear to move. The Pleiades are close enough, one of the closest star clusters to our galaxy, and so there is movement there. I'm not an astute astronomer, so I can't give you all the details of that. But what makes the story very interesting is the fact that the Pleiades come to the same place in the sky every 52 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Mayan calendar is a perfect mathematical formula. It repeats itself, and similar to the Fibonacci cycle, it has a perfect rhythm to it. This rhythm, which we also know in terms of light waves, comes into our planet and influences our subtle consciousness. What's interesting also in this eclipse of Venus is that two of the fixed stars are very involved in this. Mm-hmm. One is Betelgeuse, if I've said it right, and the other is Bellatrix.
Now, I call it Betelgeuse.
Betelgeuse.
Now, that's in late Gemini, tropically.
Exactly.
How is that involved?
Well, the Venus stationary was at 24 degrees. So the station...
Venus goes stationary. Venus stations retrograde.
Yeah, 24 degrees.
Hold on. So it's like 5 degrees away. That close enough to be counted as effectual? Station.
I received an internet communication about a month ago, and someone did all the simulations through one of the large observatories here in the States of where Venus positions would be, and sure enough, it's stationary. It was right in front of Betelgeuse. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what we know is these alignments, which have been going on for thousands of years, and in the Forest of Kings, for instance, one of the great kings, when he saw the alignment of Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, chose to do that for his inauguration. So what we also know is the Mayans were studying very, very closely the cycles of Saturn and Jupiter, right, which we know as the business cycle and so on. Part of what I'm saying here in relation to to this conversation of fixed stars and light energy coming from beyond our solar system is the Mayans were very, very much in touch with this energy as well. And so in some ways we might say they were very astute time travelers. They were able to tap into very high and subtle frequencies in relation to light or energy coming in from beyond our solar system. And this is also another reason why it's been very hard to translate where they're coming from.
Right. So what do we do now?
Well,
what's the message of the moment?
The message of the moment is return to zero. Try and stay as open as you can. In astrological terms, you better be ready to handle Uranus and Pluto, because the new cycle announced itself clearly during the conjunction in the 1960s. And now we're in this kickoff stage, okay? We got the message in the 60s, but those of us who ran back to the hills, because I was one of those, graduated from university, had to get out, you know, everything's going to fall apart.
And became a hippie. You went from being a stockbroker or business major. You were a business major, right?
No, I was actually in music and education.
Right, I forget.
But I'm a businessman now.
Yes, you have to be.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
I went to University of Toronto, which, coming from the northern wilderness...
Was the big city.
Was the big city at the time. Uh-huh. But that also allowed me to adapt to the fact that I've now traveled and worked in 14 different countries.
Right.
Here in the United States as more a blend of astrology and psychology, but in Europe doing core shamanism.
Right.
And
Son of Sasquatch. Basically. Too bad this is not television. But anyway.
Well, you know, on one hand, we laugh at the, sort of the whole flakiness of hippiedom, but that can also be applied to astrology. However, when we dig deeper into the roots of what this is all about, then we have the possibility to move forward. The movement forward has now been given to us as the re-harmonic integration. If you're really in touch with what the Earth is offering to us, there's no fear. The fear comes from our inability to live in harmony with the Earth. Do human beings have to save the planet? No. No, the planet will take care of itself.
So what do we have to do?
We have to save ourselves. And the way we save ourselves is by entering the new harmonic frequency, which is very ancient in its own way, because the Earth has been here for millions of years. Mm-hmm. We're newcomers on the block. And the Mayans understood this in a very clear way. And what makes them very exceptional is that they lived in harmony with the Earth, or it all fell apart. Mm-hmm. And it did fall apart.
For them.
For them.
Yes.
But... You know, and there's different interpretations of this. Mm-hmm. The reality of the situation was they knew that they had come here to do something, and they did it, and they let it go,
right,
and moved on. And again, it's a process that takes many lifetimes. So in that situation of letting go, they built new temples, which were up in Yucatan. These are more post, what we call post classic periods, because they had ones that date back a few thousand years. So like any civilization, it builds up through a long period of time, and then it's over. So we're in this situation right now where we've created this whole other civilization based on different time money frequencies, time energy frequencies. We come to a point where it's unsustainable, and all that means is it's not going to survive. That's all it means. At the same time, the new energy, the new harmonic frequency comes in, and this is how we can survive.
Right.
And somehow it will be a blend of what we have created, but we have to go through some major shakedowns. And as astrologers, we know that in this cardinal square, Uranus and Pluto, this is when the shaking will take place.
Mm-hmm.
We have a choice. We either live in fear, or we live in freedom. And that's always the translation between Saturn and Uranus. And that's also why I feel at this conference that the renewal and rebirth of shamanism is so vital, mm-hmm. and why there's been all these workshops on Chiron. Mm-hmm. Leonard Cohen says it all. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Well said. Dale, thank you for being a guest on Planet Waves FM.
All right. Thank you so much, Eric.
And sharing your knowledge, many years of direct experience and lots of study and teaching that you obviously bring to the table.
Yeah, and may we all enjoy the incredible beauty of this opportunity to be on the planet through this time of great change.
Yes, indeed. All right. You are listening to the continuing coverage of the United Astrology Conference here in New Orleans, Louisiana. We are signing off from this segment at about 4 minutes to 12 on the 28th of May, 2012. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a bit with a new segment.